So anyone who is here for the introduction to meditation class, that is being held in the hall to my right. In other words, if you come for that class, if you'd like to just go out through the gate, turn right, and then go to the next hall where that class is being held. There are signs outside to guide you. And the reason we do that is because that allows me to focus on deeper problems and advice about meditation in this class. Otherwise, then there's some people who haven't even started a journey of meditation. And so what I say here, they may not understand or understand incorrectly, and also have difficulties meditating for the 40, 45 minutes, which is the usual time we meditate here. And after they've completed the introduction class, they're more than welcome to come here afterwards. But a layperson told me a little bit about the meditation practice which he and other people he knew were doing. And it sort of concerned me a little bit because he said that some people, long-term meditators, often get afraid of meditating. They fear meditation. And when I asked him more deeply, is that because you get into very powerful states of mind and maybe you think you can't handle it, or maybe you feel, oh my goodness, if I carry on like this, I'll end up becoming a monk or a nun? Is that the reason why? I said, no, it's something much more simple than that. It's just that when they meditate, first of all, the first few years, they're very inspired. And then that inspiration kind of wears off. And they've got nothing to motivate them. And when they said that, it reminded me of my own life as a meditator. Because I've been meditating over 50 years now. For 52 probably. And I remember when I first started meditating, I was very keen and meditated every day, sometimes many times a day. And then I forget what period of time, but then, you know, before I was a monk obviously, that I sort of tended to lose momentum. I wasn't so interested in it anymore. You were young, you had many other things to be concerned about, but the meditation wasn't really appreciated. That was when I still cannot remember exactly where this was. But I remember just being in a coffee shop and just talking with someone I'd never met before, and it was actually a French national, that I do remember. And we were just talking about spirituality and especially meditation. And I said, yeah, I used to meditate so many hours every day, but I don't do so much these days. And then he said, yeah, I understand that. And he said that his teacher, I forget what particular tradition he was in, his teacher had advised him at the end of every meditation, even a short meditation, even if you think it's not such a good meditation, just ask yourself, how do I feel? Is this more peaceful than when I started? What things have changed? Because he said something which really hit me very hard, that even the so-called, what I thought were bad meditations, when my mind was wandering, or my mind was just falling asleep, even those bad meditations, my mind was much better than if I hadn't have meditated. There was a change, but I wasn't really looking for that change, so I didn't notice and I thought nothing was happening. You know, in the meditation you've got the big lights and lots of bliss and something, you couldn't miss that. But in the ordinary meditations, sometimes I thought, nothing's really happening. So I just didn't do as much as I should have done. And as a result of that, of course, as I teach, so I practice, I always ask you, how do you feel at the beginning and how do you feel at the end of the meditation? How peaceful are you? How relaxed is the body? It may not be as peaceful as you would like. It may not be as relaxed as you want, but it's still much more relaxed than when you started, much more peaceful than when you began. A change has happened, and quite a big change. And because I start to appreciate those changes for the better, in every meditation. It made it quite clear that what my teacher at the time, I was still a student at this juncture of my life, the teacher I had there had said something which I just dismissed. I thought he was crazy. When he said, there's no such thing as a bad meditation. And I thought, well, he don't know my meditation, maybe your meditation's okay. But you know, I was a student at the time, and sometimes you start meditating and your head would go down. And you wouldn't snore, at least I didn't notice myself snoring, because I would have been asleep at the time, so I didn't notice. But you know, you didn't notice your own meditation, and I thought it was no good. But that teacher was right, there's no such thing as a bad meditation. It was small meditation. You're actually building up some momentum, and your body is more relaxed, your mind is more peaceful. Just like last night, one of the questions asked was, Ajahn Brahm, is it okay for a Buddhist, a meditator, to donate blood? And of course it is. I haven't donated blood for a while, because I'm getting old, but also because I used to go over to Thailand and they said, that's difficult, you've got to make sure that you haven't been infected by malaria or whatever stuff. So anyway, when I first went to give blood, there was this other young man. He was an Anagarika, first of all. When I first came here, first year, and this man decided to become a monk. He was working for the Western power in those days, a city job. So he had a bit of stress. And so when he went with me to give blood, they took our blood pressure, first of all. And the nurse just was a bit stunned. He said, your blood pressure has gone down. And then the nurse just looked at him and said, hey, you weren't a monk when you last came here, you're a monk now. She said, you haven't been, and I remember the pause she gave, you haven't been meditating, have you? And of course he said, yeah, that's what we do. Okay, that explains it. He wasn't a great meditator, he later disrobed. But nevertheless, he was good enough, as he was, to have something like his blood pressure go down and be a healthier human being. So that is actually happening. And it happens to you, or I would say everybody here, when you meditate. Some people more decrease in your blood pressure than others. But nevertheless, it has great physical benefits. So, it should feel better than when you started. You should feel more peaceful. You do, but you don't notice it. Finish your meditation, oh, that wasn't as good as I expected, and get up and go and do something else. So please pause. And then you don't get afraid of meditation anymore. You don't think it's a waste of time. It's a beautiful thing to do. You feel so much better afterwards. Your spirituality is being strengthened than eating, or I don't know what else you do, watching movies, or I don't know what people do these days, listening to music. You find like listening to your breath go in and out is far more healthy and beneficial. And of course, because I've been meditating a long time now, so I'm not afraid of meditation. In fact, I look forward to it, honestly. And I notice the benefits and I make use of those benefits. Little things, like, if you're tired out, if you're tense, if you are getting tired, the meditation should make you mindful enough, you notice that. At work, I feel a bit sort of exhausted, feel tired. So you can either go and take a rest, or even better, meditate. Because meditation is not something which exerts effort. In fact, going to bed and trying to sleep, you use more effort than when you're meditating. I think you should understand that. I ask when you meditate, become aware of your body, relax it to the max. If you follow those instructions, your body really does feel relaxed. Probably more relaxed than when you're laying in bed. But more than that, you start to relax your mind as well. When I ask you to notice a peaceometer, and I wanted to get people to transition from relaxing the body, which is done with mindfulness and kindness, to relaxing the mind, which is done with exactly the same type of attitude, to relax your mind. Not to stress it out, but to keep it nice and free and easy and peaceful. And then you find, my goodness, your mind gets very relaxed, but also powerful. Of course, you know, one of those tricks is, you know, to seeing the benefits of meditation. But you have to know how to meditate properly. Because sometimes when people struggle and strive, they just create more stress. They say it doesn't work. I just can't understand that. Meditation works when you do it properly. And the properly is making sure you're relaxing to the max. And sometimes even if your body starts to disappear, got distracted there for a moment. If your mind starts to get sleepy, please let it get sleepy. If your body just decides it really wants to figure out a problem, let it figure out that problem. The most important thing to do is not to control the mind, but to be kind to it. That kindness is what works. So the kindness which you do is how you make friends with your body and your mind. And that making friends with things, again, is so important. If you're staying with a friend, it's no stress at all. If you're staying with your boss at work, that's stress. But if it's with a good old friend, a relation which you really love, you spend lots of time with, isn't that a beautiful way to spend an afternoon? And it's no effort at all. You enjoy each other's company. You trust each other. You feel safe in each other's company. And when you feel safe and trust one another, that's when you hang out together. So all these things in meditation which I become aware of, first of all, it's my body. I learn how to trust it. I know it so well. And my body is my friend. And even if there is a sickness or something, I look upon that as just, you know, I've got to care for you, friend. It's an opportunity. And the Buddha said, if you look after somebody who's sick, it's like looking after the Buddha. Really a strange thing to say, but when you look at it deeper, is you're looking after something which is important. So if you're looking at your mind when it's sick, and you're caring for your mind when it's sick, because it's tired, or it's upset, it's afraid, it's angry, it's depressed, or whatever it is, that's like looking after the Buddha, looking after truth. And you don't try and tell it. How many of you would tell somebody you love who's very sick, come on, get better? You know, it's not the first time you're sick, you indulgent body, always sick all the time. Come on, do something about it. You don't treat sick people like that, do you? You do. No, of course you don't. You know, that doesn't work at all. You're kind. When you're kind to someone who's sick, there's a good chance they might get better quicker. You know, you remember that Patch Adams, who's just making people laugh, being kind to them, and just that increased their health benefits. And this is true, one of our monasteries which we have over in the United States, they told me this, they weren't lying, I trust monks, and they said that they have to get health insurance, but they get a very big reduction in their premiums because they're meditators. They're monks. You meditate. That's well known to reduce health problems. So because of that, they don't have to pay so much. I actually am so healthy and teach so much. I should not just get, I should get sort of sponsored by the Medicare or whatever. Because I'm lessening the fees they have to pay. So little by little, we realize the benefits of the meditation, and you can feel that. And all those times when I should get sick, I don't. All those times I should be exhausted. You just go back to your room, you don't sleep, you go and sit and meditate, and exhaustion goes. All those times you just learn about your body. I do exercise as well. I was telling some of the monks that one of those times when I went over to the demilitarized zone to do a peace meditation. Ajahn Gunho was there and a few other monks. They wanted one of us to lead a walk, a meditation walk, within the demilitarized zone. We had permission to enter it. And when I went inside of it, they didn't tell me how long the walk was. It was about 3 to 4 hours. And those of you who know me, I don't exercise a lot, do I? Do you actually see me going for long walks in Bodhinyana Monastery? Doing push-ups? Other than this one, push-ups. So I started, what the heck, see what happens. And then the monk who was organizing this was keep coming up to me. He was in the car. And he said, "Are you okay, Ajahn Brahm?" I said, "Yeah, sure." But what happened? 1 hour, maybe 45 minutes, 1 hour into the walk, I started getting really tired. Really tired. So you know what I did? I decided to walk faster. To rebel against the feeling tired. I like rebelling against things. And that was amazing. Because to walk faster, I had to use my focus, my energy, to be mindful, to not let the mind wander, and just to really get into it. And I found I had a big boost of energy after that. The next 2 hours, I was walking really fast. Never got tired. What's going on there? What is actually happening, in my idea, is the power of like samadhi, of stillness, of a mind which is well focused. It does things it's not supposed to do. When I see those benefits, just in ordinary things in the world, you see, wow, this is a really great investment of your time. And little by little, you see the investment more and more, so you're not afraid of meditation. In fact, you look upon it as, or they used to say, snake oil, which cures everything. It's not far off being snake oil. Can cure almost anything, any problems, any difficulties. That's in my life anyway. So little by little you value it so much, you're not afraid of it. You look forward to it. So when it comes to the 3 o'clock meditation, yeah, it's a beautiful time. When you look forward to it like that, as you look forward to seeing one of your favorite movies, or you look forward to seeing, because the monk was talking to me about this, not a monk, he was an anagarika, he's really into football, and he was really getting off on, apparently, I'm giving his name away now, his English team was winning some World Cup match or something, so he's very excited. And he said, "When you see like a football match, are you as excited as you're seeing a meditation? This is the finals of your meditation. Are you excited? Yeah, let's get started." Sometimes it's like that when you meditate as an old senior monk. Yeah, bring it on. I'm in for this. And then you find your meditation, not afraid of it. You're just really appreciating it, valuing it. And when you start like that, you get some great meditations. It's a different way of looking when you start. All the benefits. And all of you have been coming here for quite a while, some of you for many years. So, why? It's done something for you. It's not the promise of what might happen in the future. It's actually what you know now. So little by little, you know its benefits. Remember them now. And that motivates you to get in there and don't be afraid. Get in there and let it happen. That's how it works. Okay, so now you want to just stretch yourself a little bit, or just move this way and that way. Get yourself ready to start the meditation. Go. So close your eyes. I know that some traditions keep their eyes open, but I don't recommend that, because with your eyes open you've got one other door connection to the world. You close your eyes. That's a huge amount of business. Your brain does not need to perform. You work enough anyway. So give your brain a break by cutting off the visual stimulus. And as for the sound stimulus, other than my voice, there's nothing much which changes here on a Saturday afternoon. So after a while you don't hear things. Accept my instructions. And to calm down the physical feelings in your body. That's what we're going to spend most time on to begin with. How are you sitting right now? How do you feel? And to do this, please ask your legs how they feel. This is a method which I find most useful for myself, to bring up mindfulness of my legs. Mindfulness is being aware of how they feel. When I ask that question, my legs respond. And once they respond, once I know how they feel, if I need to move them, I will do. Like my legs, I think, need to be adjusted, so I'll do that now. And once I do that, if I do it properly, then my legs feel more comfortable afterwards. I get payback. I notice that. It's just little things like this teach me the benefits. It's so simple. When you're aware of your body, you can look after it. So it gets comfortable, doesn't get tense, doesn't get sore. And doesn't have accidents. Ajahn Chah used to tell me I had stupid feet, because going barefoot in the forest I would step on things and have all these wounds and bruises and band-aids all over my feet. He said, "You have stupid feet." I thought that was a joke, but it's actually so true. Many people have parts of their body which are stupid, they don't learn. So make sure you have wise, compassionate legs. How do they feel? And sometimes I ask my legs the next question after, how do you feel? I ask them, do you want to be adjusted? And if they say yes, I will do so. I am a friend to my body. I'm not going to train it. I'm going to care for it. My body is wise enough to tell me what to do. Many people have problems with their knees, so if you need to focus on just your knees, you learn how to relax them. How do you do that? You've got to be aware. As much awareness as you can have of, say, your knees. You notice the feelings in your knees change. Sometimes they get worse, sometimes they get better. The awareness picks that up. And your wisdom finds out why. Why do the legs sometimes, or the knees in particular, get more painful? Why do they relax more? You find you can have an attitude of kindness, relaxing, opening up, letting be. And you understand what those words mean because it works. The feedback of a part of your body which is tense, relaxing, shows you what kindness really is. It's not fake. It's real, a direct inner experience of things getting much more easy and peaceful. So once my legs are all comfortable, still my foot needs a bit, that's it. There's a slight movement takes away what could have been a potential source of pain. Then I go to my butt, I pay special attention to my bottom to make sure it's comfortable, because so many people fidget or move towards the middle of the meditation simply because they got a sore butt. If your butt is comfortable, a lot of your other body parts are as well. And I check my back. Many people have stupid backs. Put them in all sorts of weird positions. They're not aware enough of them to know how to relax them, heal them. So one of the things I do is to stretch my back. As soon as you really stretch it, you can feel all these beautiful endorphins going through your blood. That's why animals do. And afterwards, let go. You can't meditate with a stretched back for that long. So I let it go. And it gets really peaceful. My back is wise, it knows its position, and it knows how it can be very comfortable for the next 35 or 40 minutes. And then I go to the front of my body, the torso, and all the organs inside. I am fortunate to have a pretty healthy body. Some of you have got all sorts of stuff going on. It's natural. The body is trying to balance stuff. But some of the things you can be aware of, you can feel a little bit painful, uncomfortable, aching. It's almost as a sign there's something needed there. In meditation, the only thing you can give it is mindfulness together with kindness. So I'm mindful of my digestive system, my colon and my intestines. And if necessary, I just relax them. feel a sensation there somewhere. Don't really know what it means, I don't give it a name. I just make peace with it. Not fighting it, that makes it more tight, stressed. And the awareness notices it starts to feel more at ease. I know I'm going in the correct direction. It gets more tense, more painful, I know I'm going in the wrong direction, so I stop and go back the other way. The awareness gives you feedback, and the feedback gives you wisdom. Use that wisdom so you know your own body. Then I go up, just like a sweep up through my organs. I don't even bother to know what the organs are called. It's just how I feel an unusual sensation somewhere. An ache, a pain, a tightness, a stress. I would always pause there and see if I can release that tension. Take away that pain. Over the years I've learned how to do that. Until when I get to the top of my body, to my shoulders, I make sure I learn how to relax those too. Even imagining them relaxing. And reality very often follows the imagination. I imagine these muscles are being stretched, these invisible beings are pulling at both ends of them. There's only imaginary beings, but I make use of that visualization. And I ask them to let go. So imagine all those muscles in my shoulders becoming loose, like taking off the tension on guitar strings. It's unwinding, so they're all loose. And that's the muscles on my shoulders as loose as I can get them. Feels good. And then I shift my attention down my arms to my hands. On the way, I only go faster because there's nothing wrong with that part of my body. If there's any aches, pains there, please stop, pause, and give them kindness, compassion. I then ask my hands, hands, how are you? Do you want to be adjusted? And they do. So I adjust them, get them into a really, what they feel is a comfortable position. And all this time, you're developing awareness of your body and kindness. What I call kindfulness is the attitude which creates deep meditation and great insights. And then you go back up to your shoulders and to your neck, making sure your head is well balanced on top of the neck. So your neck feels at ease. And go to the face. I always like being aware of the muscles around the eyes and the mouth, because those are the main muscles which I find easy to relax. When I relax those muscles, my emotions become calm. Because you all know that you can read a person's emotions by the shape of their muscles around the face. You know when a person looks angry or happy or kind or afraid. Those muscles are stretched or tense in certain different ways. When you relax all those muscles, so my eyes now are relaxing. Muscles around my face are becoming at ease. I notice that so are my emotions. It's almost like a segue into the mind, calming the body and calming the mind. Before I go to the mind, I always pause and look at the whole body together, just as one thing. And it's all relaxed. It's worthwhile just staying with that relaxed body for a little bit longer. And I would advise staying there long enough until you experience the delight of relaxation. Because the delight in peaceful, serene things is what makes the meditation so joyful and eventually grows into bliss. Starting by being aware, it's not creating the joy is there. Is being able to notice it. And I've learned how to do that with my body. It feels so nice. The body relaxed at ease. And the thing I never expected, which happened, was when I noticed the delight of a relaxed body, the relaxation goes deeper. I get more relaxed. It's a cool thing to start the meditation with. The body totally at ease. And then I feel it's time to go deeper. So now's the time to go to the mind. And I ask myself, how peaceful am I? Develop this awareness of what I call the peaceometer. And that peaceometer, if my mind is really peaceful, I give it a value, just one. If it's agitated, up to 10. What value would you give to the amount of peace you can experience right now? It's just a skillful means to become more aware of this mental quality called peace. And then that's the meditation object for a little while. How does that peace develop? What causes the reading on the peaceometer to move down closer to one? What disturbs you? What does peace feel like? How delightful is that peace? Joyful, profound. This is skillful means to get you to not worry about the past and the future. Stay in the present moment, because that's where peace lives, in the now. maybe appreciate what I always say, that now is where your future is being made. You learn so much from the present than you can ever learn from the past. Now is where the action is. And hopefully you have enough confidence, you don't need to describe things to yourself. That disturbs the peace. If it's really important, you remember it afterwards. Then you can figure out what it meant. Right now, just listen silently. Just know, without having a conversation. Knowing nature, rather than talking back at her. Hopefully, you'll soon become aware of your breathing. It comes to you. If it does, regard it just as like the waves of the ocean coming up the shore, totally out of your control, going back again, calm and peaceful. It's not so much the breath you're watching, as its peacefulness and it's its joy. Once the joy is there, the delight, you'll find the mind will not wander off. It's too much fun to wander off or fall asleep. I'll be quiet now. Another 15 minutes, I'll start talking again to bring the meditation to its ending. For now, I'll be quiet. getting close. A few more minutes. How do you feel? Do you feel more peaceful than when you started? How does that peace feel to you? How beautiful is it? How energizing. Healing. Is this worth it? Yeah, this will always be. You bet. Marvelous. Peace. Clarity. Health. Enjoy the peace. Don't try and own it or work it out. Relax, let go of that burden. Always having to work things out. Enjoy the body at peace. Stable. I was relaxed when I started, but not as relaxed as this. You can intuit. This is where the body gets really healthy. Low blood pressure, low stress. And the body cleansing itself. So I'm now going to begin ringing the gong 3 times. When the gong finishes sounding for the 3rd time, it's a time to come out from the meditation. As you come out, please realize what a valuable time this was. There we go. Thank you, I enjoyed that. But before I do the questions from online, because I think you all realize that this is live streamed all over the world. Today we've got questions from Germany, Vietnam, Bulgaria and New Zealand. Any from Australia? Any from Perth? If you ask a question, you can take your mask off for a period. No, it's a nice little... Okay, let's see what questions we have here. From Wolfram in Germany, How do I calm the body and mind without trying to heal it when in pain with breathing problems? What's the difference between letting go and letting it be? What to do when scared? How do you calm the body and mind without trying to heal it when in pain? Because calming the body and mind is the best way of healing it. Just letting things be. That's why for any physical or emotional pain, things like depression, things like OCDC, or even things like schizophrenia, the best way is to care for it, not to cure it. It's challenging, it's controversial. We're caring for things in life rather than trying to get rid of things. So if you really calm the body and mind, it's not just calming, caring for it, the kindfulness, then you find it heals. So I heal my body. It's brilliant. It works. The difference in letting go and letting it be is it's what you let go of and what you let be. What you're letting go of is control, reaction, basically wanting and not wanting. All those things we do to control the world, we let that go. What's left is what we let be. In other words, this moment, the present moment we let be, and the past and future we let go. So the past and future, bye-bye past and future. And this what's left right here is what we let it be. It's really nice. Who needs a past and future when the present moment is just really gorgeous? Many people live in the present moment. If you're watching a movie, listening to some music, or listen to something which really inspires you, you're right here, right now. And if you listen to music, you're not thinking, because you're really into the music. It satisfies the mind. When the mind is satisfied, it doesn't need the past and future. It doesn't need to go and figure things out, work things out, because you're at peace, you're happy. And I noticed that before I became a monk, the music I liked was classical music, because you could listen to every note. And it was really peaceful. I didn't know exactly why. Afterwards I'd say, how come I really enjoyed that? It was because I wasn't thinking. Couldn't think. If I just had one thought come in, or one comment, you just disturb the enjoyment of the music. Next question from Vietnam. Last one, Wolfram. What to do when scared? If you are wise enough, you say, welcome, fear. Haven't seen you for such a long time. How are you? Have you been, fear? Scaredness? I say that because it's counterintuitive. You're not adding fear to being scared. It's here. Care for it. Let it in. Then after a while, you find the scariness can't stand that. It just disappears very quickly when you allow fear to be. It's food. What fuels it, keeps it going, is negativity. I don't want this. The other thing which I used to do, what am I afraid to lose? Why be scared? Maybe you go to the doctor, you get your biopsy. Are you scared? What have you got to lose? More years in an old people's home? Is that worth being afraid of missing out on? That's why this great monk that I keep on mentioning, K.C. Dhammananda, when he went to see his doctor and the doctor told him that you're going to be die soon, cancer is terminal. I was very often, a couple of years ago, a bit concerned about terminal illness. So I would travel around so much, I used to visit so many airport terminals. I thought, I'm going to get it for sure. Oh, come on. It's okay to laugh. Terminal illness. Okay. But anyway, what are you afraid of losing? And anyway, this monk, when he was told that, you know, he had only had a few months to live, he burst out laughing. He thought it was so funny. Yay, at last, I'm out of here. If you're in prison and you're just going to be told you're going to be released in a few months, wouldn't you be happy? I would. You're out of prison, yay! What's so good about this life? Are you really attached to this life? I'm not talking about suicide or anything, or voluntary euthanasia. I'm talking about something much different than that. Anyway, I have a tendency of expecting my meditation to be peaceful, which makes it hard to be relaxed, but I have difficulty letting go of the expectation. What should I do? Yeah, I mentioned this last night again. Lower your expectations. It's a beautiful thing to do. I lowered my expectations of the two monks I sent down to Albany. I lowered them so much, I never expected them to do anything. And when I went to see them last weekend, oh, they're wonderful. I was so overjoyed. I had so low expectations. Whatever happened must have been beautiful. So lower your, they're actually very good monks, but lower your expectations of your own meditation. Don't expect anything. Instead of, you know what the opposite of expectation is? Inspectation. Don't expect, inspect. Look inside. Instead of look to the future. And that's a part of meditation. What's this moment like? Future doesn't tell you much. Present moment does. You know that I'm not quite, honestly, I'm supposed to be the spiritual director here, but I don't really know who's coming in next week or the week afterwards because we've got beginning of rains. So I know I'm going to be here tomorrow teaching a sutta class. That's about all. And so today the Thai people were asking me, "What are you coming in next Saturday, this Saturday afterwards?" And I told them the story of Ajahn Chah. You know, you're not supposed to predict the future or to tell fortunes. But Ajahn Chah did once, only once, he told somebody's future. And Ajahn Chah got it perfectly correct. Brilliant. Because this guy came up to Ajahn Chah, one of his disciples said, "Can you read my hand, the lines on my palm, to predict my future? You know, you're a very powerful monk, I'm sure you know how to do this. And what you say must be true because you're not allowed to tell the fibs." And so Ajahn Chah said, "No, good monks, we don't do that." He said, "Look," he said, this layperson, "I've given you so much food, you know, bring dana to your monastery, look after you, give donations. So please," he said, "read my future." So Ajahn Chah said, "Okay, I will." And he traced the lines on this man's palm very slowly. And every now and again he stopped and said, "Ooh, that's not so good." And this man had so much faith in Ajahn Chah. Of course, he was getting so excited. Yes, sir. What's my future going to be?" And Ajahn Chah took his finger away from the man's palm, looked up at him and said to him, "Sir, whatever I say is going to be true." "Yes, I know, but what's my future going to be?" "Your future, sir, is uncertain." And Ajahn Chah was right. It taught him a lesson. Anyway, question from Bulgaria. "How do you develop the habit of regular meditation in a busy day schedule? Thank you." One gentleman I know, he told me he meditates 1 hour every day, except when he's busy. When he's busy, he meditates 2 hours a day. And what that meant was, you realize when you're busy, you have a lot of work to do. You need the clarity and peace and energy of meditation. Otherwise, it doesn't work. Your busyness creates stress. And the stress creates anger. Anger at your son or anger at your mum. Anger at the people you love and care for. Why do good people get angry? They're so tired, stressed out. Give me a break. So that's why when he's very busy, he meditates 2 hours a day. When he's not so busy, a minimum of 1 hour. Because when you understand the power of meditation, its benefits to you, of course you'll meditate as when you really need it. I tell this most every week. How heavy is the glass? You've heard this so many times. How heavy is the glass? The longer I hold it, the heavier it feels. You know, most people, they hold the glass all day and at night. This is a simile in their mind, worrying about something, thinking about something. They don't know how to put it down. You learn how to put it down, your arm relaxes, you're fine. You learn how to put down your worries and concerns for half an hour meditation. Afterwards, you feel so happy and peaceful. Lastly, a question from New Zealand. Oops, there's two round from the back, bottom here. From New Zealand. There are two stories about meditating monks being disturbed by ghosts and lower realm pettas. Is this possible? If you're not in a deep meditation, just the beginning of some meditation, yeah, they can't really disturb you. But this one monk who lives in Perth, ex-monk, won't say who he is. But he told me he was in this monastery where there was lots of these ghosts and spirits and stuff. And, you know, this is in Thailand, his teacher told me, yeah, they're there. And he was meditating, and then one day he got tired. So in his heart, he just leaned against the wall, put his feet out, and he just closed his eyes just to take a bit of a break, and something tugged his foot. And he thought it was like some heavenly being telling him to wake up and don't be so lazy. So he said, thank you, and he started meditating again. But that was just the start. Then something pulled him again, and he realized this was accompanied by a bad smell as well. It was obviously one of these spirits. And it was always disturbing him. And eventually what he did was, you know, he was waiting for this spirit to come in. And when the spirit came in, he could smell the spirit, the ghost, and he told the ghost, listen, you meditate with me, here's a chair for you or a seat for you, or you get out now. And that's the last time the ghost came. Basically, it's just like anyone messing around, you tell them, get out of here. And because human beings are much higher, more powerful than these spirits, of course they have to run away. You just let them mess around with you. You shouldn't. If they come on and they're messing around with you, say, out. Behave or get out. And they have to. Can meditation go wrong sometimes? No, mindfulness can't go wrong. Brainfulness can go wrong. When you keep thinking about things. So anything can go wrong if you let it. A lot of times the life is just balancing and healing. Let it balance and heal you. And meditation is just learning how to be peaceful, and still that can't go wrong. I'm not sure, but sometimes I guess I'm in deep meditation, I get scared, and after 2 or 3 hours, I'm unpleasant. Ah, if you get scared, that's a good sign. What is fear anyway? Fear is losing something which you think belongs to you. Like pinching the ice cream from the baby. Mum will get another ice cream for you. But it's my ice cream, you can't take it. So a lot of times, when you feel fear in deep meditation, that's a really good sign. Stay there. What are you afraid of losing? The only thing you're afraid of losing is stupidity and suffering. Why are you afraid of losing that? I'd tell the last story about that after this next question. Update from Alan. Thank you, Ajahn, for answering my question yesterday. Meditation helped me a lot. After the Dhamma talk yesterday, I meditated. My anger disappeared. I cried, and after the meditation, I wrote in my journal, forgiveness is for the forgiver. Thank you, Ajahn Brahm. Oh, that's a bit of advice I gave after the talk. Well done, Alan. But now, about why we get scared. This was the... Anyone from Indonesia here? Indonesians? Oh. Either people are deaf, or it must be someone from Indonesia. Anyway, in Indonesia, I've got a lot of followers there, and they call me Guru Cacing. It's easy to know what guru means, like teacher. And Cacing means worm. And so I'm the teacher of the worms in Indonesia. So when I ever go there, they go, oh, our teacher has come back. They've got a great sense of humor. The reason they call themselves worms was after that story, which is from the Buddhist texts about these two monks. And these two monks, when they died, they were best friends when they were alive. They always hang out together, meditate together, went places together. And when they died, one got reborn in the heaven realm, the other one got reborn as a worm and a part of cow poo. You know, like the dung beetles, the dung worms. And so anyway, the one who was reborn up in the heaven realm, he started after a while thinking, where's my friend? I want to find out where my friend is. And so he uses his powers, looked around all the heaven realms, couldn't find his friend anywhere. And thought, he must have been reborn as a human being. That's a special realm. So he looked all the human realms, couldn't find him anywhere there. Oh my goodness, he may have been reborn as an animal. So he looked in the animal realms, couldn't find his friend there. Maybe the creepy crawlies. And there, to this monk's horror, this heavenly being now, he found his friend had been reborn as a worm in a pile of cow shit. And please excuse me for saying that word, but if you come to the sutta class tomorrow, you'll hear me talk where the Buddha said you must use the local language when you're describing the Dhamma. That's part of the sutta tomorrow. Anyway, so the heavenly being appeared outside right next to this big pile of stinking, steaming, smelly cow shit and said, hey, worm, 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 come out. And this little worm poked his head out of the pile of cow poo. Yeah, what do you want? And this heavenly being said, we were monks in a previous life. We were best friends. I don't know what you've done. I was reborn in a beautiful heaven realm, but you've been reborn as a worm in a pile of cow poo. I won't let that happen. Come with me. I'll take you to heaven. What did the worm say? Hang on a moment. In this heaven of yours, I don't know if I believe in heaven, but to me, a pile of cow shit is like heaven. It's so warm. It's so fragrant. And it's my food. I don't know what food you eat, but imagine being born living in a pile of food which you really like the most. And he said, listen, is there any cow poo up in heaven? Cow shit in heaven? Oh, come on. It wouldn't be heaven if we had that filthy stuff there. Hey, be careful. Don't be offensive. It might be smelly to you, but to me it's home. And so the heavenly being could not convince the worm to come to heaven. But he thought, he can be a bit more aggressive. So the heavenly being grabbed the worm and tried to pull it out of the pile of cow poo to take him to heaven. If I could only show you what heaven is like, I'm sure that you will understand it's much better than being born and living in a pile of cow poo. So he grabbed the worm, but the worm didn't want to go. And because the worm was was covered with slimy stuff. The worm just was so slippery, could escape. When the worm escaped, it went right down to the deepest part of the cow poo. But you know, friendship is so great that the heavenly being didn't give up. Now just imagine if that was, say, Queen Elizabeth, and she put her hand into cow poo to try and save something. That would be such a wonderful sacrifice, wouldn't it? The heavenly being is much higher than a queen. Put his hand right in there to try and find his friend the worm. Eventually found him and then tried to pull him out again. But every time he tried to pull him out, the worm escaped and went deeper into the pile of shit. And in the end, the heavenly being had to go to heaven and leave the worm to the pile of cow shit. The worm was afraid and scared of leaving his cow shit. That's why the person here who says that sometimes they're scared in meditation, what are you scared of? You're scared of leaving the cow shit. Your attachments. And for all the people here, for the last 38 years, ever since I first came to Perth, I've been trying to pull you out. I don't want to go! And that's the end of the story. I thought people get really offended, but they get the message and they say, oh yeah, I've got a few more lifetimes and piles of cow shit before I can get released. Okay, anyway, if you want to throw things at me, please miss. Anyway, any other questions anyone has? Okay, that's enough then. Because people really loved, they were laughing their heads off in Indonesia when I told those stories. So they always call themselves now the Chaching, and I'm the Guru Chaching, trying to get them out of their piles of cow poo. Okay, now we can bow a few times. I like telling you too, I must admit.